This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president, for more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, February 27th edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help enable you to become an above average investor. We want to help you expand your knowledge, but just as important is to gain some perspective as well. Help you better measure your results, adjust your expectations, help you make better and more well-grounded decisions as opposed to rash emotional decisions without really a plan. It's our goal for our clients and it's goal for our listeners as well. Now, what's your first consideration? And that should always be about risk versus reward. Everyone's always looking for opportunity, the next big winner. But the number one factor that should be considered before taking the plunge in any investment is understanding risk factors. Every investment has a various number of risks involved. Could be liquidity risk, could be market volatility risk, it could be interest rate risk, could be the opportunity cost to be in something else that's a risk factor as well. Now, everyone knows stocks are risky, bonds are less risky, and cash has very little risk, except for inflation risk. However, in today's investment landscape, there are not only subcategories of stocks and bonds that need to be understood, but also alternative assets such as commodities, precious metals, hedge funds, real estate. And risk is pervasive in today's economy because there's so many types of investments out there. It's become easier and easier and easier to get exposure to various asset classes. And therefore, the various types of risk show up more often because you're simply getting exposed to the ability to invest in more types of assets. You know, think of crowd investing, right? With investing in real estate through crowdfunding. That's still real estate, but that's even less liquid than most other types of real estate investments, right? So it's not just the asset class, but how you're accessing that asset class as well, right? You could buy a variable annuity, which you should never do, and that gives you maybe exposure to the equity markets, but it's a very illiquid, high fee way to get exposure to the equity markets, right? So it's not just the asset class that you're looking at or the type of investment you're looking at, but how are you getting exposure to it? That's something to consider as well. Now, as stated, stocks are risky, but not all equities lie on the same risk spectrum. A large cap, blue chip, dividend paying name, maybe like Walmart, is far less of a risk than a small cap name with low liquidity, doesn't trade a lot of shares, doesn't have a dividend, maybe it's a new or uncertain business model. Those two investments have different risk levels, even though they're both equities. And I know this may be obvious to some, but it needs to be reiterated for many because a newer investor might not understand that. And even if you're using an ETF that gives you instant diversification or a mutual fund, right, where you're buying automatically a group of stocks, you could be buying a large cap versus a small cap. You know, the Russell 2000 is more risky than the S&P. Now, one way to measure this risk is to find out the beta of a company or a fund. The higher the beta, the higher the potential market risk. It's a way to measure market risk. It's one factor to consider market risk. But that doesn't mean that a low beta name is without risk, right? It's just various gray areas of the risk spectrum. Now, even large cap companies can lose their way and die a slow death as well. You go back and look at the Dow back in the 60s, and the majority of the companies in the Dow back then are no longer in business. Like a Kodak, right? And then various industries carry inherent fundamental risks. The tech industry is fraught with technological obsolescence that can strike any competitor. Look at BlackBerry. They were the creme de la creme in the early 2000s, and then 2007, Apple launched the iPhone, and within 48 months, BlackBerry was decimated. Now, commodities or industrial industries are subject to high up and down swings based on economic cycles, so that's the risk there. Or the biggest risk in that area, right? So economic cycle risk, economic risk in a particular sector can apply to multiple sectors, but it can be at various levels depending on which sector you're looking at. So a recession can send the shares of an industrial name down very quickly, and it might affect the tech company, right? It might affect Apple because people might spend a little bit less on iPhones, but they still need their iPhones. Still need their computers. So it's going to be affecting Apple less than it would an industrial company that is, you know, selling widgets. Now, in addition to these risks, you also subject to ebbs and flows of the market due to various other factors such as natural disasters, political wrangling like we're seeing today. What happens if we shut down the government in, was it 17 days because of the fiscal cliff? That's political risk. What if Trump puts tariffs on border, you know, puts a border adjustment tax or tariffs on in various industries or various countries? There's risk there. So if you're to own equities, you must be prepared for the volatility that comes with all the various types of risks. Now, do you have a question about measuring risk in your portfolio? What about a particular sector? Do you understand the risk? Maybe you're looking at a particular company or companies in a sector, and you want to understand all the risks that are involved primarily in that particular sector. We can talk about that. Talk about interest rates, the economy. Trump's State of the Union speech tomorrow. Real estate. Whatever you want. We're ready for any money questions at 8899-CHART. Let's go to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric from Southern Utah. Had a couple questions for you. One, what are your thoughts on ticker symbol BBW? That's Build-A-Bear Workshop, Inc. Stock looks terrible. Looks like they may potentially have to file bankruptcy at some point down the road, so I'm looking at shorting the stock. My other question is your thoughts on selling calls against your long positions, if that's a good way to hedge, if you suggest that, or, you know, you give me some of the pros and cons of positioning yourself like that. So anyway, I kind of new to the options market, and I've done a little bit of selling calls into my longer positions, and sometimes they seem to work out, other times not. So, you know, I just wanted to get your overall thoughts on that strategy. Love the show. I'll be listening. Thanks. Bye.
All right. He's looking at Build-A-Bear Workshop. BBW is the symbol. He's looking to short the name. It's already down from about $15 a share in, let's see, when was this? December of last year. So not that long ago. Down to $10.10 today. Hit a low in the eights a few days ago. So it's certainly a down a big. So I think you're kind of late to the game on the short. And they don't have a ton of debt. You know, I like to short companies that have a lot of debt. Because the only way you can go bankrupt is if you have debt. And, you know, they don't have huge negative cash flow issues or anything like that. They're still profitable. Return on equity is 21%. They're certainly going to be hit because of, I think, the slowdown in mall traffic. That's a big issue, and a lot of their locations are in malls. So I don't think it's a good short candidate, to be honest with you. I don't love it from a long side, but they don't have enough debt for me, and their business isn't bad enough for me to go short. So I would not be shorting Build-A-Bear Workshop. You're definitely too late to the game. And when it comes to selling calls as a way to hedge, that's a decent way to kind of hedge your way in case the market does drop. The issue is if the market drops 10, 15% or more, all of a sudden that premium of 2 or maybe 3% that you'll get on selling a call is not nearly going to make up for the loss that you'll see in the market, right? So it's only going to hedge you off a few percentage points by whatever you're getting for the call premiums that you're selling out there in the marketplace. So it's an okay way to hedge, but if you're looking to really avoid large losses, it's not really the best way to go. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. You have a retirement portfolio, stocks, funds, bonds, but do you have a plan to help keep you on track to minimize risk? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. Now, it's time to plan your the big question is it time to plan your income differently in retirement? Now, retirement planning for the retired, that's our main talking point today. It's once you hit retirement, your planning doesn't end. And so we're going to discuss the ways that you can access your income, right, your savings, while at the same time not overpaying on taxes in retirement. So we're going to touch on that. And then Goldman looks like they're losing faith in Tesla. They're giving up on Tesla. I'm going to talk about why. I mean, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you'll know I do not like Tesla. I think it is one of the – it is a dog with fleas. It's got problems after problems after problems, and it's all hype, overhype, and triple hype. So I'm going to touch on that. And then the changing relationship between stocks and bonds. The bond market is sending a different signal than the stock market. Question is, who is going to win? And then finally, is your bank pushing you into wrong products? We obviously saw the issues with Wells Fargo and their practice of pushing their clients into bad products, cross-selling. And I'm going to touch on that and why you may be tempted to do something that's probably not in your best interest, but it's in the bank's best interest, so that's why they're pushing on you. So those are my main discussion points for the day. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question. And I urge you to get your call in sooner rather than later. Let's take a quick look at the market today. The Dow is up 15, the S&P up about 2.5, and the NASDAQ up 16.5. It was down earlier in the day, and we had a ramp up in the dollar-yen, which really pushes the market around as of the last 6 to 9 months or so. And that kind of pushed the market up throughout the day. A lot is going to depend on what Trump says tomorrow, I believe, in front of Congress, and whether the market starts to believe in the Trump trade again. And so far, it continues to wane, even though the major indexes have not done so as well. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Of course, we'll talk about stocks and bonds, funds, ETFs, whatever is on your mind. Do you have a question about investing in real estate? Where do you begin? I want to hear from you. Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Let's go to Steve in San Jose. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. How about yourself?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Well, I have the opportunity of getting Snapchat at the IPO price.
Uh-oh.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Uh-oh. Are you a big institutional investor?
No, I'm just a no.
I'm just
okay. A private investor.
Okay, well that makes me worry even more. Usually, when a private investor gets the opportunity to get into, especially a highly hyped IPO like Snapchat, what that's telling me is that the big institutions are not buying it.
Right.
Can you tell me how? I mean, who called you? How did you get in on it?
I contacted my broker.
Okay.
I trade quite a bit with them.
Okay.
I got the Facebook IPO,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't really think much of it when they offered me this one.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're probably maybe one of their premium clients.
I trade quite a bit, but I wouldn't consider myself a premium client. But I do trade quite a bit.
Okay. Well, you know, if you got in the Facebook IPO, which, you know, that was kind of a dud early on too, right? And they did turn themselves around. I expect Snapchat to be a dud. Now, early on, it might do okay. But from what I see, I mean, what I might do is take a risk on it to buy it. I would buy it pre-IPO, and I would probably sell it quickly. Because typically how these things work is early on, they might do well. And even, I don't know if you remember, but Facebook, it's the first day it closed where its IPO price was. Remember that?
Right. And NASDAQ had trouble. They crashed and some other things happened also.
Yeah. And what happened was the institutions came in and supported it. They didn't want it go below the IPO price. And so for a little while, the institutions supported it. And, you know, eventually it broke lower and it was lower for an extended period of a year. I think it was probably below the IPO price. And then once they figured out mobile ads, then the company kind of turned around. So it took a little while for them to figure it out. And what I would do is get it. And very likely, even in the worst case, the institution that's underwriting it is going to support it at that IPO price in the first day. So if it is not going higher in the first day above the IPO price, then I would probably get out of it and, you know, flat, or, you know, maybe it's a small loss or small gain, I would get out of it. If it can have a decent first day, it might run for a month or two. But typically IPOs are terrible investments long term, although, you know, obviously Facebook's been a big winner. But typically, they're not good. And I've looked at Snapchat's numbers, and they're horrible. So as a long-term investment, I wouldn't own it. But if you can get on the IPO and the institutions are going to probably support it in the first day, I would take a chance at it.
Okay, great.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Steve. That was about the Snapchat IPO. Now, typically, you can't get into these IPOs. So Steve is either the big institutions aren't buying it, or Steve's just a good enough client to where he's able to get some preferential treatment. Or maybe he's just at a big broker that is buying a large chunk of it, and they want to treat their employee right, or their good customer right. So there can be various reasons, but typically when the average investor gets their hands on it, it's not the best, not a lot of demand out there in the institutional space. And the institutional space tends to do the most research on these things. 8899CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, once you hit retirement, your planning for tapping your retirement funds really doesn't end. So what you have to figure out is how you're going to access that income while at the same time not overpaying on taxes. Now, first you have to separate your accounts into taxable, tax-deferred, and tax-free. Now, taxable are, you know, your typical savings accounts, maybe mutual fund accounts, individual accounts, real estate investment trust assets, etc. When you take it out, you know, they've already been taxed. When you take it out, you're not taxed on it. You're just taking that money out. You're accessing it. Then there's tax deferred. This is your IRA, your 401ks, 401bs, pensions, deferred compensation, annuities, things like that. Once you withdraw the money from them, then you're taxed. That's something that you need to separate those out. And then tax-free, these are like tax-exempt municipal bonds, Roth IRAs, life insurance cash value, health savings accounts, etc. These are tax-free when you set them up, and you know, when you take the money out, you're not taxed either, but you're tax-deferred in the meantime, right? So you have to figure that out first. What type of accounts do you have? And then what are your allocation factors? What are the risk levels? You know, because you're not generating new income through a paycheck, you may want to decrease your risk levels, obviously, of your assets to minimize the chance of significant income losses if the market makes, you know, a big downturn. So if you're looking to take money out, it might be best to sell your risky investments sooner than your maybe safer investments. Certainly, timing is a factor as well. If the market's really good, then you really want to focus on getting rid of the risky investments and rebalance. And then taxes is a consideration, like we talked about, which income tax bracket you're in. And then longevity. How you have to plan. This is what we help our clients do is do they have enough money to retire based on their income needs and their life expectancy as well. So all these are very important factors. 888-99-CHART is our number, and this is InvestTalk.
Our InvestTalk podcast continues next. Managing your money is more than just investing, picking stocks and funds. So KPP Financial offers their clients help in answering all of life's money questions. We can help with a broad range of aspects, not just your investments, taxes, real estate, and KPP Financial doesn't collect commissions. They don't have biases toward particular investments. So when you're looking for answers about money, the staff at KPP Financial is there for you. And they're very accessible, very diligent about answering their emails, and very diligent about returning their calls. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions for more than 20 years. And now we continue with our podcast. On our next InvestTalk, systematic portfolio rebalancing forces the ultimate investor axiom to hold true. Buy low, sell high. Rebalancing is all about risk management. That's one of our topics next time on InvestTalk, and we hope you can join us.
Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How are you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Justin. I was wondering if you can take a look at GDX and you still feel that it's got a higher price to come?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it certainly hit some resistance around the $25, $26 area and had a pretty nasty sell-off today. But if you look at the price of gold, you know, this is a gold miner ETF, remains strong. And you know, you'll have these kind of times of divergence between GDX and gold. But typically when that happens, means a big move is about to happen. So I do think a big move in GDX is coming. It could be to the downside, to be frank. I don't think it will be. I think it will continue higher when it finally breaks through this kind of resistance level. And it needed to pull back a little bit. And so to me, it's showing that a big move in GDX is coming in one way or the other. And I do think it's going to remain in a bullish manner.
Is there support on a downside that you think needs to hold before you start panicking again?
Well, I wouldn't panic, but I would say, let's see, what's this level right here? Somewhere around, there's a lot of support around the $20 to $21 area. If it breaks that, let's see what this low is. Yeah, I would say if it breaks 20 bucks, then I'd start getting really worried. But as long as it doesn't break that, there's a lot of support between now, around $23 and 20 bucks. And I think it'd be hard for it to break it, especially in the near term.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for calling, Mike. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, today, Goldman Sachs started to kind of give up on Tesla, I think. They downgraded Tesla to, $180 a share. And they're starting to come around on all of the reasons that the skeptics have been skeptical of Tesla. Because they're making massive investments in production of their cars. And they haven't demonstrated any roadmap to profitability. All they're doing is burning cash, and I believe they burnt threw about $13 billion in investors' cash so far. They're incinerating cash. That's how they keep the lights on there. They don't get it from the from the grid. They throw cash into a furnace, investor cash into a furnace, and that's how they keep the lights on there. Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but that's what it seems like if you look at the amount of cash that they are burning on a quarterly basis. And in the past, typically, Goldman Sachs has participated in them raising capital in their financing. And the fact that Goldman has come out and downgraded their stock to a sell, expressed a lot of concern about their level of cash flow and the ability for the Model 3 to really hit market when Elon Musk says it will, to me shows a couple things. One is they're definitely not part of the next financing round, which is going to be before the fourth quarter, absolutely. Otherwise, Tesla is going to go bankrupt. Now they say, well, we believe Tesla currently has a lead relative to OEM peers with respect to vehicle technology adoption, electric vehicle architecture, and potentially battery scale. Our concerns are more near-term oriented with respect to operational execution on the Model 3 launch, an unproven solar business, and cash needs. Ultimately, we see delayed launch and free cash flow burn rate to weigh on Tesla shares. Now, they bought SolarCity, and that's hurt their cash flow problems even more. In the past, Goldman's been a big supporter of Tesla. They've been one of the largest names covering the stock. Morgan Stanley recently lost faith in Tesla. And their cash burn is so dramatic that they're going to spend $2 to $2.5 billion between now and the end of the second quarter on capital expenditures. And then they have a few billion dollars in capital left on their balance sheet. So they're going to have to raise capital to get the Model 3 into production. And not only that, but suddenly there's no longer talk about the Model 3 being a $35,000 car. You notice that? Listen to their conference call. They're not going to have cash in July, by the end of July. So they're going to need to raise probably about $3, maybe $4 billion to get them through the end of the year. Otherwise, they're going to be bankrupt. They promised the world, and they keep putting it off. Elon Musk is a great marketer, and he makes great innovative products. But he doesn't make profitable products. That is the issue. They're stretching their accounts payable. They're playing the game. Their CFO quit last quarter. Their projections for 100,000 car Model 3s being produced this year, there's no way they're getting even close to that number. Maybe 20,000 cars, maybe 30, if they're lucky. And you got to remember, they promised a $35,000 price tag. Well, they're selling used Model S's at $50,000. The demand for Model S's and X's starting to wane. They have about 12,000 Model S's in inventory, or Model S's and Model X's in inventory, which is a big number for them, considering they're only, I forgot what they're delivering, but they're delivering about 23,000 cars a quarter. So they have about a month and a half of inventory sitting there. So the Tesla story is a farce. They will go bankrupt. It's just a matter of when. Let's go to Bobby in Atlanta.
Hey, Justin. How you doing?
Doing great. Good for you.
N as Nancy, V as a Victor, O as an orange. NVO. Okay. I want to buy some. Do you think it's a good time to buy?
So you're looking at Novo Nordisk. This is a biotech firm, healthcare company that is engaged in the discovery, development, manufacturing, and marketing of pharmaceutical products. Two business segments, diabetes and obesity care and biopharmaceuticals. I don't love the healthcare space at the moment, to be honest with you. But let me take a look at the numbers and the chart. It has declined. I like, you know, it's a line climbing from 55 down to 35. It's near support. So I kind of like that. Do you know why it fell from 55 all the way to 35?
Just because of the election. Just like every other pharmaceutical company.
I don't buy that story. I mean, if you look at like Biogen IDEC, another biopharma company, they're right up to where they were around the election time. And if you look at IBB, the biotech sector, you know, mm-hmm. It's doing pretty well. It's right, same thing, right around the time of election. Actually, it's higher than where it was in an election. So I don't buy that. So that worries me a little bit. It hasn't rallied with the rest of the sector. Now, saying that, it is a good value. It's earnings yields about 8%. I like that. Dividend yields about 3. Its payout ratio is not crazy by any means. What I would say, this is what I would do. I'd buy it, and I put a low at that. What's that low for the end of last year? I'm trying to find to get this exact date on here. That low was $30.89. I would have an out there. Good dividend, good company, good value. Certainly not a fast grower like a lot of biotech companies. But it is at support, and if it can stay above that low from late last year, then I think you're in good shape. So I would use that as an out, but I kind of like it.
Okay. And do you have time for one more?
Sure.
Potash, P-O-T. It's dry.
I like potash. We own that for some managed accounts, so that's an easy one for me. I like the sector. I like its dividend. I like that it's turning itself around, and I'm a fan of potash.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Justin.
Let's go to Sandeep in Los Angeles.
Hi, Steve.
No, this is Justin. How's it going?
Hey, Justin. Hey, how are you, man? Hey, I listen to Invest Talk all day, especially in the morning going to work. I want to know about Starbucks. How is it doing? I do own a bit of it, but I don't see much of progress in it. Is it a good thing to keep it, or should I just get rid of it?
It's kind of gone sideways for a little while now since, let's see, what's that?
Last year?
Yeah, I would say 2015, the end of 2015. It's kind of gone pretty much sideways. It peaked back then, and it's kind of gone sideways. A lot of it is just it's not cheap. It's really not at these levels. Operating yield 5%. It's not fantastic. 1.5% dividend, even though that's a pretty safe dividend. You know, it depends on your time horizon. Is this a buy and hold investment, or are you worried that, you know, maybe a recession's down the line and this could decline dramatically, and you might be worried about that?
I think Starbucks is a pretty dependent company. Mm-hmm. Starbucks have, since Depression 2008, Starbucks has done pretty well. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see any progress or performance. I'm not sure how it's going. So I don't know if I should hold it or should I get rid of it, for a few years.
Like I said, you know, it just depends on what your goals are and how you see owning. It's a great company to own long term, right? But it can certainly decline dramatically in a recession, right? The last recession peaked in 2007 around about $19 a share, and it went down to $5 a share.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So a decline of 50% is possible in the stock because it is cyclical. People start getting laid off, tightening their budgets. Well, they're not going to spend $4.50 on a Frappuccino, right? They're going to go to the local coffee shop and get a 79 cent coffee. Okay.
Right.
So there is a lot of economic risk for this name. Now, am I going to buy it hand over fist in the next recession? Absolutely. Because it's a great long-term investment. I don't think people are going to change their coffee drinking habits over the long, long term. And they're everywhere. And so they have a lot of what I call operating leverage, meaning they have a lot of overhead costs because of so many locations. And that's good during good times, but it's really bad during bad times because all of a sudden, just a small decline in revenue can turn into a large decline in profits. So if you are – the odds are within the next 5 years, there's going to be a recession, and you're probably going to get this a lot cheaper. But do you want to – I mean, is that what your bet going to be? It could go up another 20 or 30% between now and when it finally peaks. Maybe it's already peaked. I don't have a crystal ball. But it depends on the way you're looking at it. Remember, if you sell it, you're no longer going to get that dividend too. So that's something to consider, even though it's not that big.
I think I'll just wait for the next time to come and get a little cheaper, and then I think I can dive into it.
I don't disagree with that that strategy either, but you have to understand when you're looking at buying and selling any company, what are the risks and potential rewards as well, and what type of cyclicality and risks are involved with that name, and what's your time horizon? Thanks, Andy.
Okay.
Now, Steve has some new dates for Northern California for individual retirement reviews. Now, in March, he'll be in San Jose twice, March 15th and March 25th, the 15th and the 25th. Or if you live out of range of our California offices, Steve can meet via Skype or phone. So to reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
At the heart of a good professional relationship is trust, trusting that your financial advisor is looking out for you. KPP Financial is a registered investment advisor, and being a fiduciary, they are required to make the best possible decisions for their clients. And being that the principals invest their own money in the same programs as their clients, there's a little extra assurance. If you'd like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab when you're ready on investtalk.com.
Now, there's a changing relationship between stocks and bonds. You know, when Trump got elected, there was the initial push up in yields and the market as well, right? The inflation trade was on. Everyone was expecting fiscal stimulus and tax cuts from Trump. And then starting around the middle of December, the Fed raised rates and everything kind of went sideways for a while. And then over the last couple weeks, you had an odd divergence. Equities went up, but yields started to fall. The bond market is telling us something. And it's telling us that their faith in the Trump trade is waning. So I think that's eventually going to feed into the market. I can come back and talk about that. We have one more segment left. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Dave from Walnut Creek. And I was wondering what you think about eBay as a long-term investment. EBAY. Thanks. I listen to the podcast. Bye.
I was looking at eBay. I think everybody knows who eBay is. It's got a decent value right now. Operating earnings yield about 6%, which is okay. No dividend. I don't like that. I like to see a little bit of a dividend there. Positive cash flow, even though the free cash flow levels have declined by about 50% since 2014. That worries me a little bit, especially there's also some stagnant earnings growth as well. I don't really love it. It does have pretty good return on equity, and it's good figures, profitable figures. I don't know. I just don't love it. I mean, I know that e-commerce is taking over, and I'm torn on this one. I don't like that it doesn't pay a dividend, even though it's a kind of a large cap name, or it is a large cap name. It has good cash flows. I mean, look at what its operating cash flow has done. You know, that's declined since 2015. I just don't love it, to be honest with you. And I think everything, Amazon's taking a lot of the market share when it comes to online e-commerce. Other companies are pouring money into online e-commerce. Sharing economy is picking up, so there might be other ways to sell things. I know Facebook has a platform now to sell product on their used items. So I'm just not a big fan of it. It's not cheap enough for me to get excited. And technically, you know, it is pretty strong. But I don't like the fact that operating profits are declining, and the nature of e-commerce is not really moving away from eBay, but it's not moving towards eBay either. So I just don't love it at these levels. 8899 chart is our number, 8899-242-4278. We have 3 minutes left, so if you're going to call, you better do it now. Now, last year, there was a bombshell involving Wells Fargo, right? They opened about 2 million accounts without their customers' consent in order to accrue bonuses. So we know that the big banks, and Wells Fargo is one of the most reputable banks out there, large banks out there, and even they had issues with these conflicts of interest. And there are a ton of conflicts of interest in this big banking sector. And this month, Bloomberg reported that salespeople in the private banking unit of JP Morgan Chase have been aggressively pushing the bank's own financial products, even when they may not be the best available option to their clients. Several former employees of the firm told the news outlet that it was virtually impossible to reach their sales targets without selling these type of funds that generate a lot of fees for the bank. So their only option was really to push clients towards these in-house investments or some other partner firm that had a big fee-sharing arrangement with the bank. And this is even after allegations in 2015 was regulators ordered JP Morgan to pay $307 million due to improper practices in its asset management operation. And this is what we talk about all the time. And this is what the Department of Labor, the DOL fiduciary rule, is trying to change, is the conflict of interest that happens at these big firms. They're going to push you into their products. Okay. And if you don't understand that, then you're just going to be duped by them and you're not going to be put into the best investment for you. Now, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau offers the following tips to make sure you don't fall prey to these over-aggressive sales tactics by your bank or maybe your broker, right, who's also probably going to push you into the products that make him the most money, as opposed to that's best for you. Make sure you ask questions and seek out all the information that you can. Don't sign up unless you understand the features, what the features are, and how much it'll cost you. Don't sign up for recurring payments as well. And ask is the fee one-time charge or is it on an annual basis? So asking questions is very important. And don't just buy it from your bank or your broker just because they say so. Do your own investigation. Now, our time is up for this hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Now, on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. I hope you can fit us in on your schedule for tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.
Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.